subject this morning is spirit. So we will start with the golden text. You all have an opportunity to share what you've gotten from this lesson this week. When the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord shall lift up a standard against him. Anybody like to comment?
That just feels like such a protection and comfort that when you get that feeling like you're just overwhelmed, that God will lift up a standard against him. And you can rest in that, in the sense of instead of trying to beat out at the flood.
Yeah. And what is the enemy?
Good question. I was just going to ask that.
Human mind?
The ultimate enemy.
Anything that would take us away from God.
Anything that would lead you away from God. And it doesn't say if the enemy shall come in, it says when the enemy shall come in. So Eddie has something to say about that. Anybody think of what she has told us about that?
That's when we should be wise as serpents.
Yeah, and she says something like that the serpent is always nipping at the heel of truth.
Yeah.
So, wherever the truth is, the lie is going to try.
I know she said in other places that when we're tried in the heat of the battle, so to speak, that those, that's the times to be more committed to God, more faithful to his leadings, and not succumb to the pressure. That's not an exact quote, but something like that.
I think it also makes me think about what Joshua's promise that I think it's in Joshua 1:5, it says, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. I think I remember the teaching here, which referred to the fact that nothing can really stand against your knowledge of the truth. This is a protection from God if we are relying on it.
Yeah, and what is the standard that the Spirit of the Lord lifts up?
The perfection of truth, truth's standard, I mean, the spiritual standard of perfection.
Yeah, it's the truth that the enemy is a lie. Whatever would try to separate you from God is a darned lie. And that's the truth.
And it has no power.
One of the definitions of standard that I found was it's an ensign or a flag of war. And I thought that the Spirit of the Lord will declare war against any enemy that would try to come in like a flood. I mean, it's not a lukewarm thing. It's declaring war.
Yeah. And Mrs. Eddy says that Christian Scientists enlist in a warfare. I know I found that a little tough to swallow when I first got to Plainfield. The idea of having to go to war every day. Well, not like we have a choice, though, is it?
Not hardly.
No. But
that's right, because if you avoid it, the inevitable comes in. You got to face it. You can't run away from it and hide. So it's like error demanding to be resolved. Like, well, maybe that's not the right. It's error demanding to be destroyed or seen as unreal. And the demand on God is that we resolve things in His way.
And where is the warfare?
Warfare is in our human consciousness, mortal consciousness,
within ourselves.
Yeah, and what does Mrs. Eddy say about that?
It's grand.
I said grand.
It's grand. A warfare with ourselves is grand. It gives us plenty of employment.
Exactly.
Like everyday employment.
Constantly. I feel like the biggest, the greatest thing we have on our side is if we love everybody, and that takes care of the warfare. You have to love the enemy, and that's hard to do, but you need to do that. You have to outlove it.
Well, you need to love the person.
Yes.
You need to love the real child of God. But the enemy is not the person.
It's the error.
The enemy is the false belief, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's okay to hate the false belief, because that's your only real enemy. You're right. When you have love for the person in your heart, then it's not quite so hard to hate the enemy.
But really, the deadly blow to it, Mrs. Betty says, is to know its nothingness, its powerlessness. So that was helpful, yeah.
And if you can laugh at it, even better.
I think Ava wants to say a little bit.
It's so refreshing.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry for nothing. Don't be sorry for one thing. We love
from the mouth of babes.
You can keep that green with
Okay.
I keep on thinking that this idea of enemy, I mean, I'm only speaking from my own experience, but my enemy is that if I adversely react to something and get disturbed, me, that's the enemy. And this might be like on a small scale, but I was just thinking about the other day, I was trying to get across town, and it seemed like I was stopping at every red light and getting a little bit more perturbed every time I had to, until I stopped and realized that, well, these traffic signals represent something good, public safety and order. And in that sense, it has something of divinity behind it. And after that, the green light started showing up, and I wasn't aggravated, wasn't wrestling with my enemy, so to speak, anymore. That's just one example. Just had to throw an example out there.
Your enemy was seen as not. Anybody else?
Was when the enemy shall come in like a flood. As soon as I let one negative thought in, they all come in like a flood. And I have to catch it right from the beginning, not go around with something or overlook something, or I have the whole flood.
Well, that's a good thought. If you let one wrong thought in, it brings all its cousins and nieces and nephews with it, doesn't it?
I think this is where the discipline of starting off in the morning, always, always, with our Bible lesson and whatever else we can do to really get thought aligned with God is so important, because I found that every time I didn't, something wrong comes in, and as it says, you're already mesmerized if you don't do that, and then you're on the wrong path. And sure, the flood comes in.
Thank you, Florence.
Yeah, because first thing in the morning, your consciousness is like a sponge, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're fresh, you're open. Whatever you put into it tends to stay there.
This sheds a little bit more light on this enemy thing, because all too often, believe me, I have to contend with this all the time. Get up in the morning, and it's so inviting. oh, let's dash off and do something. I know exactly what to do, and I'm ready. Let's get it done. But being faithful to that morning time, like Florence was saying, read your lesson, not only read it, but contemplate it and pray with it, is a necessary discipline. Because who knows what would have happened if I had just dashed off. It would have been like Sharon said, you know, one thing sneaks in, then the flood comes.
Okay, how about the responsive reading? What did we get from the responsive reading?
Not to talk in Christian Science jargon to people who come into the church that haven't been there before.
Has anybody heard the jargon spoken at a Wednesday testimony meeting?
Yes.
Oh.
Not too often.
I'd rather speak 5 words with my understanding than 10,000 words in an unknown tongue. It's pretty clear, isn't it?
You lose people when you talk too much. Keep it simple and powerful and don't keep blabbing.
The word unknown, I think, is very telling. Because for somebody whose mouth starts moving and it just can't stop, it's unknown. They don't know what they're saying or what they're doing.
To make sure you understand and you're living what you say. Otherwise, it's going to sound very hollow and people will not, it'll be detected.
Yeah,
and we always talk about the importance of living or leading by example or being an example. So really just putting into practice as much as we understand, no matter how little it may seem. And that's why our testimony meetings are so helpful, because we do have to practice what we're learning, and it's much better to explain it that way through a testimony or a healing that we've had on our own than just talking all these things.
Right, and this is important in raising children too, isn't it?
Yes.
Because children learn by your example. Almost doesn't matter what you say.
Believe me, they're watching your every move.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing that. Everything you do and say, they may be looking the other direction, but they're watching.
And also everything you spoke about coming from love, if it's coming from your heart, not through your thinking or figuring things out humanly, but from your heart, it will touch people.
Yeah, there was a thread on the forum on the subject, wasn't it? I think did Shahidat start it or
yeah.
Somebody? About, you know, not being afraid of saying something. Because when you speak with love in your heart, who is it that's speaking anyway?
Is she here? Yes.
Is Shahidat?
Yeah, she's here. Yeah, say what, it was so Shahidat.
You remember what you wrote, Chai?
Yeah, the point I was trying to make is, in the past, I felt that, you know, someone asks about Christian Science, and I'd go into a bunch of yada yada, and they would clearly not be welcoming. But when I put the human side aside and let this God be the speaker, it's been much more effective.
Thank you.
Yeah. And what's the difference?
Well, I like what she said. She said she could sort of shut down God, or you shut down hearing God. When you start out feeling embarrassed or, you know, what are you going to say? It's that personal sense of self that comes in, and then you shut it out, and you can't really get out of the way so God can use you. It's a very good point. There were a lot of really good points on the forum. There always are. So thank you. Probably refer to some today.
Yeah, we did have a good forum this week, didn't we? Okay, anything else on the responsive reading?
Well, I
just kept noticing the word understanding cropped up about 4 or 5 times. And I thought that was a very important point, that we don't just recite things or do it by rote or something. It has to be something that you understand.
And how do you understand something?
Through demonstration, from learning how to use it.
By proving it.
By proving it, thank you.
Right.
You have to. I think you have to be very humble to reach another.
Well, not only that, you got to realize where the source of it all comes. I remember the statement in the Bible where Jesus said, "As I hear, I judge." Oh, to hear what Jesus heard. Obviously, he was listening to that source of all understanding.
But you were very right. That is humility, isn't it? There was another... Sana wrote something on the forum about, "Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves."
That's a good one.
Yeah. Is Sana, here this morning? No. No. Does
not,
anybody...
I have it up if you want me to read it. I assume she's Sunny Bird.
Yes.
Because it says,
yes,
wise as serpents. Do you want the whole part read or just the part?
Yeah, just read what she wrote about
okay.
that. Thank you.
I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Jesus prepared his disciples for the difficult road ahead of them. He did not send them out defenseless, but armed them with the understanding that would be their protection from the resistance and hatred they would encounter. Below are some interesting notes from the Bible commentaries on this passage. The wisdom of the serpent is to escape notice. The prudence of the serpent is especially apparent in the quickness of its perception of danger and the rapidity which it escaped from it. Thank you. They were to imitate the serpent's wariness, but not his wiliness. Probably the thing in which Christ directed his followers to imitate the serpent was in its caution in avoiding danger. No animal equals them in the rapidity, thank you, and skill which they evince in escaping danger.
Then
harmless.
Go to the end of the last paragraph.
What stands out to me here is understanding that we need to be quick in seeing through evil's claims of being a person or a situation and recognizing it as animal magnetism. If we attach the evil to person or thing, we would be in danger, for we would be making a reality of evil. Instead, we handle animal magnetism, the nothing calling itself something. We keep our thought about man pure and unadulterated, unmixed with any claim of evil. By aligning our thought with God, we remain as innocent as doves, our safety, and are able to bless our fellow man.
Thank you.
So we talked earlier about the fact that we are in a warfare. So there's a quality of the serpent here that's actually really good when you're in a warfare.
Alert.
Sense the danger. I thought it was good what she wrote about what can go wrong if you attach the evil to a person or a thing.
Well, the warfare is not only with what's coming in, but also within ourselves. I mean, I don't know.
We have joined the warfare. We do that.
You know, the warfare is never with a person. It's with false belief. or animal magnitude. And if you attach the error to a person, you end up... you end up shooting in the wrong direction.
I think there's a misconception even within the culture that if you leave evil alone, it's not going to bother you. Or that we've also kind of classified as specific things, not really understanding what evil is claiming and then not seeing it.
Very good. And that is personal sense, isn't it? And Mrs. Eddy warns us about personal sense on every page of the first edition of her textbook.
It was said of Jesus that he loved righteousness but hated iniquity.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, it was interesting to me about the serpent because, you know, I always had, well, in the Bible it seems like a very negative connotation, but this wise is serpent, so how is it wise? And this is the way it's wise. It detects the error and then it removes itself rapidly. And we should be as that wise as that. But it's a twofold lesson because the error, the serpent, can come on you very quickly and remove itself very rapidly. And if you're not alert to that, be alert. Have your spiritual sense up because you might feel like something has hit you, but you don't know where it came from. So let God speak to you and know what it is to handle. And as we've been saying, it's always animal magnetism wearing various masks. But it's always animal magnetism.
And how do we perceive danger? How do we perceive evil?
We are afraid of it. We are afraid of something. In God's world, we don't need to be afraid. But when we see evil, then fear comes in.
How do you see it? Do you see it with your eyes?
No, you feel
it. Hear it with your ears?
You feel uneasy.
And what is that?
Spiritual sense.
Yes, spiritual sense. I ask that question because everything always comes back to spiritual sense, doesn't it? It's the only sense that you can rely on. Science and Health, number two, she says the discords of corporeal sense must yield to the harmony of spiritual sense. So if you're going to perceive the danger in the first place, you have to be trusting your spiritual sense, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the only way you can face the danger with a sense of spiritual sense, yeah.
The only way you can perceive it in the first place. If you're not trusting your spiritual sense, you won't even know that the danger is there. That's called sleep.
Is that the same thing as a gut feeling?
Yes.
Yes.
You can call it gut feeling. You can call it intuition. Call it inspiration. You can call it revelation. All of those are words to describe what you get from your spiritual sense. In Matthew, Jesus knew their thoughts when the Pharisees were accusing him of casting out devils by the prince of devils.
He really put it to them, too, didn't he?
Well, how did he know their thoughts?
Spiritual sense.
His spiritual sense was always active.
Like Mrs. Eddy's.
like Mr.
Knew what she knew what people were around her thinking.
And so can we. So can you. You can know. That's the beauty of Christian Science. It's not just for a few people. It is the way God made us. Okay. Shun profane and vain babblings. What's a profane babbling?
Kind of evil.
Bad mouthing.
Anything that's unholy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Irreverent.
Yeah.
Lack of respect for God and what God is.
Webster says not pure.
Yeah. And vain babblings. What are vain babblings? Of course, babblings is not very...
Vanity, self-centered, focused on your own personal preferences, whatever they may be. Godless.
Useless. Useless, hollow talking.
Yeah. Empty, worthless.
And sometimes at work you hear people talk about someone else in a way of putting them down and making themselves look better, which makes them vain babbling. Yes.
Exactly.
Interesting how profane and vain are used together in the same sentence. Same idea.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking with this presidential election coming up and using your spiritual sense as to the one that God would like. So make sure you are using it and that they are following biblical principles, how they speak.
Yeah, because the moderators do what? They try to attach human personality to the person, right? They try to attach human weakness to the person.
They would try to provoke. So the only way to really know is to use your spiritual sense and not be deceived. So I'd like, Linda, you speak about what you wrote about the idle word.
Okay. I'll just over it quickly because I wrote a lot, but it really hit me. The definition of idle meant vain, thoughtless, useless, that really accomplished no good, and that really it was a waste of time and it would be a sin. And it also then really is a window into character. And that you may think, oh, it's just, you know, a few words or what's the big deal? But it is a big deal. So we're accountable to God. And if we're reflecting God, then we must be in all our ways, which including our speaking.
Yeah, because if your heart is right with God, what comes out of your mouth will be a blessing, won't it?
Yes.
And if what comes out of your mouth is not a blessing, That should be a pretty big red flag.
It's easy to get so caught up even just in casual talk or just not so thoughtless, really. And, I mean, that goes to where Mrs. Eddy said that if, what did she say? People would confine their talk to subjects that are profitable, that which St. John informs us took place once in heaven, would happen very frequently on earth, silence for the space of a half hour. That made me really think about when I talk to people, what am I really doing, being mindful. I appreciate this lesson. I don't think I ever even paid attention or noticed or maybe even saw that one line. And I even saw it in context with they were criticizing him, but really it's just any idle talk that you should be accountable for. And it made me really want to look into my heart, you know, why am I saying some of these things that I say, even if they seem casual on the outside. Impress people, to be entertaining, or to nervousness. I don't know. It could be a lot of different reasons.
That's really good. I wonder how many people actually think about why they say what they say.
Yeah, very many.
I didn't before Plainfield, so thank you. Excuse me.
I think this speaks to, you know, what we say about ourselves too and what we think. And it makes me think of Brigham Young's statement that the law of harmony and love is to all that I think, say, and do today, is something to that effect. And it's really helpful because, you know, sometimes we say a lot that is not sound about ourselves. It's not just what we say to other people. And again, what we say about ourselves, then it means we can say about others, too.
Yeah, it's easy to malpractice on yourself, isn't it?
And if we accept things that aren't good in others, we're accepting it for ourselves.
Yeah, because when you point a finger at someone, you get three fingers pointing back at you, right?
Do unto others as you would have them do it unto you, I guess.
Well, and that's, and isn't that the nature of the human mind? It's so stupid that it can't see anything in anybody else that is not in itself already. That's the human. And we should get out of the human so fast, so far. That's why the warfare with oneself is so grand.
Constantly.
I remember learning that you should keep your conversation in heaven. And when you're with a group of people, that's when it's easy to let your thought just go along with the group. You have to keep your thought right on the money with God.
Yeah, it's work, isn't it? But when you take the high road, have you ever found that you can actually change the circumstances that you're in? You can actually change the environment when you insist on a higher standard?
Yes,
absolutely.
I've heard testimonies from some of you where you've done that.
Mrs. Eddy also says the warfare with oneself is grand. She's not saying warfare with others. It's all back to yourself again.
And Jesus, what does Jesus say? And I, if I be lifted up,
draw all men to me.
Yeah. Because people are not happy gossiping or making profane and vain babbling. Do it, but they're not happy about it. They would rather be lifted up.
a lot of such talk is just filling up time, and it is meaningless, and so people are not fulfilled. People always really want fulfillment.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. There was something in Science and Health that I wanted to cover, where it says, man is tributary to God, Spirit, and to nothing else. What does tributary mean?
Accountable?
It comes from, yeah. The source.
Yeah.
God, Spirit, is the source of man. God, Spirit, is the source of each one of us. I was, we've talked about this before, but Mary and I have been listening to a biography of Albert Einstein. And I found it absolutely fascinating. I didn't know much about Einstein before reading this. But he, you know, he changed in a major way the way all physicists and scientists think about the universe, think about matter. And he did it at a time when Mary Baker Eddy was around and praying for the world. And he was not a he didn't sit around with experimenting. You know, he didn't do experiments and then try to draw conclusions from his experiments. He sat in a chair and got inspired ideas. And that's how he developed everything that he developed. And he left the experimentation to other people, but he got ideas. And he respected the fact that God's Spirit is the source of man. He respected the fact that God's Spirit was the source of everything, real. And he was striving to find out what was really real. And the fact that he went about it looking at how, you know, matter moves and doesn't move, I thought was interesting, because it led him to the same conclusions that Mary Baker Eddy discovered a few years before. And it was interesting, near the end of this biography, Einstein, whenever he got a thought, whenever he got an idea, you know, a revolutionary kind of idea, he always put it to a test. And the test that he put it to was, if I were God, would I organize things this way? That was the test as to whether an idea that he got was right or wrong. And if he felt that an idea that he got was not the way God would want to organize things, then he dismissed it as not a good idea. And he battled with other physicists about quantum theory, because he didn't believe that what, because other physicists were saying there are things that happen by chance. They can only be described by probabilities. And Einstein refuted that. He said, God does not roll the dice, play dice. Einstein did a tremendous, you know, he did a tremendous thing.
I don't know if any of you know that, if this is true, if I just heard this, that he went into a reading room and he told the that the rep, he told the people there, do you know what you have in this book? And he meant signs and health. And I don't know if I just heard this or if any of you have heard this too.
I think it's well known. He did spend the last 12 years of his life in Princeton, and he did visit the reading room there, and apparently fairly often. And he did have a copy of Science and Health, and he did read it. And on David Keystone's website, Healing Unlimited.
We did talk about this at one of our roundtables, Karen. It's also, I know you don't have a internet, but it is on our internet, okay. On our website, all the things that he said, which we quoted, and it was from David Keystone's website. I don't know how well known it's known, but it's known amongst Christian scientists that how well he thought of Mrs. Eddy. And you see why. And it was so sweet to hear the ending align him with, well, would this be what a good God would do? And if it wasn't what a good God would do, then he didn't believe it to be true. And so you could see what a great and wise thinker he was. And coming along, right along with Mrs. Eddy, finding out similar truths in a different way, of course.
The interesting thing is the other physicists, which weren't looking at things from the point of view of God, where they saw chaos, Albert Einstein saw order, a divine order.
Yes, yes.
And the argument that they got into.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful at the end he found science, the ultimate truth, which totally corroborates the science that he knew and loved. I'm sure it must have been of a great comfort to him to have read Science and Health and to realize what Mrs. Eddy revealed.
Yeah. He was on the right track, too.
He most definitely was.
He was, exactly. Exactly.
He didn't just see a big bang. He knew that everything was ordered and everything was as God wanted, as God saw it, it was ordered. Everything was in order. There was a reason why everything was in place.
And what he said about science and health to others was that it was the pure science.
Yeah.
That it was also ahead of its time because he knew that it was more than most people could even begin
understand.
But nevertheless, we know that the world is ready for Christian science, and that is why God gave it to her at this time.
A few weeks ago, I wouldn't have believed it, but now I am talking to fellow Christian scientists, and I can see it too now, and that's wonderful.
For two or three are gathered together in my name. There he is in the midst of us, right? Okay, any other, anything anybody else got from the lesson that they'd like to share?
They were talking about erudite talk. I mean, this is speech, much learning. They may had that's what I got out of that, is that... Isn't it erudite? Is that much learning? And if you have much learning and don't really understand what you're saying, you know, that's where the babbling goes on and on and on. That is nothing. That is
too much human education and not enough wisdom.
Yeah.
What did you write about, Carol?
It was about arguing that... you should never try to argue, because if you try to argue truth to someone else, they dig their heels in even more and they don't want to hear it. You state a truth, you say whatever you feel is that God's impelling you to say, and then you let it drop. and you leave it in God's hands because God has the answer. God loves that other person as much as you do or even more. And God takes care of it, and it just, it will stay within them and grow. And at the right time, they'll get it. But you can't ever argue, try to convince someone of something.
Yeah, Florence, you wrote about that too, right? A manic convinced against his
will.
Yeah,
A manic convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. It's, I learned it from plenty.
I love that.
Right. Well, and this idea of arguing, it's pretty willful, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And what was one of the things that Jesus despised the most in people? What did he reserve his greatest rebukes for?
Hypocrisy.
Hypocrisy and
self-righteousness.
Self-righteousness. Because people argued the truth too much. Sounds a lot like self-righteousness, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. The battle of the wills just leads to more contention. That's why wars spring up among us.
Maybe that's why I married an unchristian scientist, because I knew arguing is useless. He just, in his yearbook was written, he likes to argue, and I can't argue with him. So I've gotten so much more quiet, and that's good for me. I know it is.
Well, yes. It's what you live, exactly.
Yes.
Not so much what you say.
And Mrs. Eddy says that. It's mental. If you know the truth mentally, there's nothing they can argue against. That's a very wise way to work, because you never win an argument.
No, you can't.
Okay, the bell has rung, but I'd like to finish with something that I read recently at a board meeting from Waymarx in Retrospection and Introspection, where Mrs. Eddy is talking about the Christ and its evolution over time. She says, the ideal of God is no longer impersonated as a waif or a wanderer, and truth is not fragmentary, disconnected, unsystematic, but concentrated and immovably fixed in principle. The best spiritual type of Christly method for uplifting human thought and imparting divine truth is stationary power, stillness, and strength. And when this spiritual ideal is made our own, it becomes the model for human action. St. Paul said to the Athenians, "For in him we live and move and have our being." This statement is in substance identical with my own. There is no life, truth, substance, nor intelligence in matter. It is quite clear that as yet this grandest verity has not been fully demonstrated, but it is nevertheless true. If Christian Science reiterates St. Paul's teaching, we as Christian scientists should give to the world convincing proof of the validity of this scientific statement of being. Having perceived in advance of others this scientific fact, we owe to ourselves and to the world a struggle for its demonstration. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's have a great service. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.